What is up? Welcome to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. It's Jamie Dodd. It's my co-host, Thomas Strantz.
Hello.
Who also covers the team at The Athletic, debuting a Cockney accent.
Oh, no, that was my, like, voice that I used to talk to cute things like dogs and children.
Hello.
Sounded like a chimney sweep over there. Canucks Talk brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Let Kubota do your heavy lifting. Visit them online at DLEAMC.com. We are live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. A lot going on today. Very busy show, of course. Game number two for the Canucks. They host the Philadelphia Flyers tonight at Rogers Arena. It's also Alex Edler night. Franchise great, signing a one-day deal to officially retire as a Vancouver Canuck. And Alex Edler will be on the show with us in about half an hour here at 12:30. We'll also speak with Charlie O'Connor from the Athletic, from Philly Sports, covering the Flyers.
My former colleague.
Former colleague, of course, but no longer with the Athletic.
He'll join Ryan Clark on the list of storied former colleagues of mine that appear on Canucks Talk.
So we'll talk to the Flyer, talk to Charlie O'Connor about the Flyers at 1, and then, of course, Dmitry Filipovich will join us at 1:30 to wrap up the week with a look ahead at the Flyers and the Canucks opponents coming up next week as well. So lots to get into. We got to talk about the game tonight, about Alex Edler, the Flyers. So much going on here. Let's get right into the whiteboard.
All right, now, fellas. Hey, let's focus up, huh?
It is your daily deep dive into what's up with the Canucks for today, October 11th. Headlines, and again, as I just ran through some of them, but the Canucks get another chance to pick up their first win of the season, this time against the Philadelphia Flyers. And we go from it's just one game, which, by the way, I saw led off your latest piece at The Athletic. I was very pleased to see that. The iJog movement is gaining steam.
Some iJog in the lead. Why not?
Fantastic. You know, it's still only two games, right? But I guess the way I'm thinking doesn't roll off the tongue. The
iTog?
Same way. Yeah, I know. It's like,
iTog.
IJTG is like,
iTog sounds like something you don't want to admit on the air.
But I guess the way I was kind of thinking about this one this morning is
iJog is something you brag about on the air.
Yeah.
iJog.
Yeah, that's right. iJog. No big deal.
iJog.
Super in shape.
I talk like, hey, buddy, keep it to yourself.
The way I was thinking about this one is, well, we see a little bit of progress, right? You know, we talked about the growing pains aspect of trying to build this new identity without sacrificing the identity that made the team special last year. And I think we were very upfront about it's going to be a progress. It's going to be a work in progress. Certainly for the early part of the season, but likely for long stretches of this season, right? It's a difficult thing that they're trying to do. So I guess early in the season, game by game, for me is just not that it's going to be a straight line, right? The perfect trajectory of, okay, they're getting better every game, and then all of a sudden they'll have it perfected, you know, come December or January or something like that. But do we start to see a little bit of that progress towards what they're trying to build, right? That new identity that they've come into the season really focusing on. They get a chance to show us some of that progress tonight.
Yeah, and, you know, I think this goes back to, like, there were definitely threads of this Canucks offseason where the club considered just returning the group, like bringing the band back together. How many times did we say the term getting the band back together or keeping the band together during the month of June, right? I mean, it was like every day it was keeping the band together watch. You would have thought we were a VH1 special. And is that a topical reference? Does anyone under the age of 35
get it? I got it, but it is not topical at all. VH1 Behind the Music?
I was just like, man, sick reference. That's what I thought to myself. And then I was like, no one under the age of 35 understands that. But Don Taylor loved it. So anyway, the fact is that the team did try, right? Like, they didn't just try to. I know Zadorov had some commentary about feeling a little bit disrespected, but you know, the fact is that the Canucks made credible offers to Zadorov. They made very comparable offers to what Elias Lindholm ended up signing for in Boston to keep him, too. So there were worlds where this Canucks team was, you know, positioned in a way to perhaps better preserve the identity that they carved out last season. And instead, the club ends up sort of signing all these depth wingers and sort of rethinking what they need to do. I think the main thing, you'd like to see signs of progress, don't get me wrong, but I think the main thing I want to see, honestly, is just them stick to it. You know what I mean? I think what they're trying to accomplish is, as you noted, going to be difficult, but it's so obviously necessary. It's so obviously the right thing for this team to be leaning into. And so I think what I'm, you know, obviously some early returns, some immediate success would be great. But I think what I'm most curious to see is just how stubborn they can be about playing their way. Right? And we've seen them make some unstubborn decisions. I'll use this to pivot to another headline. Vincent Deharnay, right?
Mm-hmm.
Looks like he's going to be healthy scratched in what would have been his second career game as a Vancouver Canucks defenseman. It's a $2 million player with term on his deal, albeit only 2 years, that the club prioritized signing after the initial rush of free agency when Deharnay was still sort of surprisingly on the market. Lot of talk about this, right? A lot of questions. It's pretty rare you see a team go out and recruit a UFA and then scratch him after 2 games.
Yep.
Vancouver's top UFA acquisition is playing with Elias Pettersson, right? The other guy, their other top UFA acquisition is playing on the top line. Like, this team tends to put their new players, the players that management is, really stamped, positions to succeed. Deharnay certainly looking a little different after just 1 game. Now, it wasn't a good game. He wasn't particularly sharp. I think we could have some, fair concerns about how the puck moving will work with Vancouver's third line on the ice. But I think that was true of the Meyer-Susie pair, too, to be totally honest with you. I thought it was true of Derek Forbert as much as it was true of Vincent Deharnay. And in Vincent Deharnay's breakout season for the Edmonton Oilers last year, like, he mostly played with Brett Kulak, who's a, pretty competent, thoroughly responsible, but also relatively dynamic puck mover through the neutral zone. I mean, that's what Kulak does and has done throughout his career. So, there's a couple threads here that I think are worth unpacking. The first is that obviously this isn't ideal and obviously does reflect team performance. And I think the Nils Amon scratch really reflects that. We talked about the different approaches that a coach can take following a disappointing outcome or like a gutting collapse,
yep,
or however you want to dramatically frame what happened to Vancouver against Calgary in game one. But, it does seem to me that what Tocchet has done is made changes, and the changes feel like they're very much about tightening up, right? Like, there's very much a bit of a message being sent. Nils Amon, when you go back and look at the Mackenzie Weegar power play goal, he kind of gets caught in no man's land off the draw and provides a flash screen that hides the release from Artur Shelov's. He's just a little bit out of position, finding his bearings, but it was a costly error on Amon's part. And then if you go look at the sort of go-ahead Jonathan Huberdeau goal, we talked about it, how there were two Canucks cheating up high. Really, it was Amon missing his mark. So he goes and he basically, if you go watch the goal, you'll actually see it. He goes in and there's basically a moment where him and Kiefer Sherwood have decided to both attack the point. It's Amon who needs to track back to the net in that moment, right? Like, in that moment, he needs to make the read and go effectively, like, regroup down low. He doesn't, and obviously the Canucks end up outnumbered in the blue paint. Well, there you go. That makes sense. Like, Amon played a lot. He was on the first penalty-killing unit. I was surprised, frankly, over the course of game one to see how robust his role was. And then I was somewhat surprised to see him draw out at practice yesterday. But when I thought about it and went back and looked at the tape, he was the guy who made minor mistakes. I think that there's a similar message being sent with Deharnay. This is a player whom the Canucks view as more of a project, a developmental piece that they acquired to see what they can get. I think in that vein, being a little bit patient with the subpar optics of scratching a guy you just signed and recruited in free agency, I think makes sense. I think this is a player we need to judge a little bit differently than we would a normal UFA,
yeah,
and that's consistent with how the club's talking.
Well, and I'd be curious what their messaging to Deharnay is as well, right? Because they've been very open, speaking publicly about, hey, we view him as a project. This is a guy we think there's a lot more there. We want to work with him. I'm sure there's been some version of that conversation with the player as well, right? So I think once you're already establishing that line of thinking, as you said, the second game scratch becomes a little bit different than it would for a player in a different situation. You know, the point about Oman, I think, is an interesting one because, as you said, it looked like he was playing a pretty substantial role. Then he's poised to come out, and per Tocchet, he will come out of the lineup tonight. And I think it's a case of, with Niels Oman, there's so little offensive upside that he has to be nailing those details.
For
right?
sure.
As soon as you're not nailing those details, it's like, well, why are you in the lineup?
Yeah.
Right.
Where if you're making mistakes on two consecutive key third period goals as like the guy who's tasked with playing safe minutes.
Exactly.
Well, that undermines your whole case.
The whole theory is I'm not going to make those mistakes. I'm going to nail those details. Not much is going to happen when I'm on the ice. Not much for us, not much against us. As soon as the not much against us part starts to slip, it becomes a lot harder to justify keeping him in the lineup, especially when you got an option like Pugh Suter, who's healthy enough to come in and play for you at this point. And, you know, just to your point about the stubbornness, right? How much stubbornness do we see from the Canucks on this? I think back to when they made the switch from Bruce Boudreau to hire Rick Tocchet, and one of the kind of buzzwords at the time was alignment. There needs to be alignment from the top of hockey operations to the coaching staff to the players, right? I think we've seen that alignment.
Yes.
Since Rick Tocchet has arrived, and you know, we could go through all these different examples of how we've seen it. So my gut says that there will be a pretty significant level of stubbornness as they work on this, right, and try to process it. But you also do need to see some tangible results, some progress at some point. Not necessarily tonight, not in game two, but you have to see that it's going in the right direction. And then I guess it also butts up against, okay, they have that alignment to be stubborn, but we also know that Jim Rutherford typically likes to fix problems pretty quickly if he thinks they're legitimate problems, right? So I think that question of stubbornness, I think they're going to give it a long run, but then maybe once they decide it's not working, if they get to that point, you could see some pretty decisive action as they try to retool what they're going to do here this season.
I think there'll be time. I think time will be given. And, you know, I do think there's alignment, but there's always going to be some disagreement
Absolutely.
Or competing philosophy, you know? And so... It'll be fascinating to watch all of this play out and sort of how the dynamics impact, you know, Canucks leadership, how they all think about it a little bit different.
Another headline I want to highlight tonight that has been like kind of curiously under the radar, I think, here is this is Matvei Michkov's NHL debut. And he ended up going seventh in the draft in his draft year in 2023. But I think a lot of people have maybe forgotten, or some people anyways have forgotten a little bit, just how much hype there was for Matvei Michkov in that draft year process, right? The season started out with, can he challenge Connor Bedard to go first overall, right? And ultimately Connor Bedard left no doubt, and there were the questions about Michkov's contract and all of that. So ultimately that wasn't really where the discussion went.
Not to mention the sort of return of the Russian factor with a variety of geopolitical considerations as well.
So for all of those reasons, he ends up going seventh, but he comes over a lot sooner now than people had thought when he was drafted. And this is a really phenomenally exciting young player, young prospect. You look at what he's done in the KHL at his age. It's extraordinarily impressive. And, yeah, this is the Flyers' first game of the season, so we get a chance now to watch in Vancouver his NHL debut. I am very, very fascinated, very excited to see what this kid looks like in his first game.
Yeah, on the rule of, like, for the most part, the best hockey players are famous. Like, the best hockey players in NHL history were famous at about 16. Michkov's been on our radar as, you know, a blue chip top prospect for years and years. Ended up going late. An interesting what if as he makes his NHL debut tonight, and that I think the Canucks absolutely were one of the few teams that would have been pretty comfortable taking him. Canucks obviously end up selecting 11th and pick Tom Volander. This guy looked so dynamic in the preseason and just in general. I think if we're coming out of game one of the Canucks campaign, and look, I think panic is uncalled for, but I think it's fair to be curious and skeptical, for example, about certain question marks that we entered the season harboring about this team and how it played out in game one, specifically goaltending, right? Looks like we're going to see Kevin Lankinen tonight. So a chance to answer that. But also this Philadelphia Flyers team is a pretty interesting test or a pretty interesting challenge from the perspective of, you know, NHL goaltenders. They are a team that's going to attack a ton off the rush. Well, that's a pretty interesting challenge for Lankinen. It's a pretty interesting challenge, too, for the Canucks, especially if you're someone who came into the season thinking, hey, you know, that Canucks blue line group, are they mobile enough? Well, you better be against Philly because they're going to attack vertically with Konechny and Tippett and Michkov now. A lot of starry rush scoring threats up and down that lineup. Even if we think of them as kind of like rebuilding and not having a genuine star, right? They're just loaded with some of these skilled fast guys. So I feel like the Flyers in some ways pose a really fascinating test. They're almost built, I think, in a way. Well, I guess the term tough matchup applies, right? Like the way that this Flyers team attacks, the Canucks struggled to handle it last season. There's, I think, reasons to think that might be an even more pronounced effect tonight and then again next Saturday. If you're someone who wants to sort of see Canucks goaltending bounce back and see more mobility from the second and third pairs, this Flyers team is going to present a really fascinating obstacle in the Canucks' way as they look for their first win of the season.
I'm excited to talk to Charlie O'Connor about the Flyers later, too, because I mean, their season last year was so fascinating, right? Remember, for so much of the season, they were this plucky good news story.
It was, but we also always knew, I don't know. I mean, you know me. We've been doing this show forever.
Yep.
Never want to bump into the Flyers in the first month of the year has been true every single
100%.
Time. But they always didn't just fade. Plucky.
The fading was especially ugly. Right? Like, we're towards calling out the team, and then, like, the team just quitting on him, and he had to kind of recant and try to walk it back, and it was,
It was every John Tortorella season. I don't know what you're saying. I don't know why you're presenting this as
worse.
Unique.
I think it was worse last year. I think it got uglier last year.
I mean, it always sometimes gets ugly by, like, varying degrees. Like, you're turning a dial, though. This isn't reinventing the wheel.
It's definitely not.
Do you remember?
Not the first time a torrid season has gone off the rails in the back half.
Yeah,
that's for sure.
After being a feel good story around Christmas, like, you remember that one, Vancouver? You heard that one before?
Sounds pretty familiar.
I don't know. Honestly, every torrid season is the same. Every torrid season is different. I agree with you. It was really interesting to watch the same thing play out that we've seen 15 other times.
It got much more publicly ugly than it normally does. It did. It just did.
Man. He tried to fight Bob Hartley in Vancouver. Like, what are you talking about?
The Vancouver one is like a special situation.
The Luongo trade.
That's 10 years ago now.
I don't even think this is the problem. The Vancouver situation wasn't a special situation. It was every John Tortorella season. It was just one of the most amped up. The one where the dial got turned
to
max.
Well, and it was one in the Canadian market, too, right? So
totally.
It was like hyper-focused. And as you said, the dial got turned all the way up on that one. And then we should also mention, of course, and we'll have a chance to talk more about this when we speak with Alex Edler. And after our conversation, we can take some time to reflect on it a little bit as well. But Alex Edler signed a one-day deal to officially retire as a Vancouver Canuck. He will be honored at the game tonight. He spoke to the media earlier. He'll speak to us in about 10 minutes or so here. But, you know, franchise record holder for so many different things among blue liners. Although, as he said, Quinn Hughes is going to smash a lot of those records in fairly short order here.
Like this season.
Yeah.
is he going to get to goals? No.
No.
How many does he need for goals?
Well, Edler had 99 goals as a Canuck.
And he has?
I don't know. Let me see. That's good radio right
there. Yeah, buddy.
That was dynamite radio right
Let's
there.
Let's go.
Quinn Hughes has 43. So it's going to be still a little bit.
Maybe by the end of the year.
Yeah.
The 56-goal Quinn Hughes campaign. We're all waiting for it.
And points is 335 to like
290?
409, I think.
Oh, okay.
If I'm reading it right.
So
yeah.
that's a season and a half for points.
Yes.
Assists will happen this season, and then goals might be a couple. Two or three.
Goals will be a while, yeah. But
well, two or three. If Quinn's scoring 17 a year or 15 a year, it's going to be three seasons.
Yeah. But assists will happen this year, yeah, for sure. Anyways, we'll talk to Alex Edler more.
Assists might happen this month.
But an incredible career for Alex Edler with the Canucks. Just an absolute workhorse for them for so many years.
Well, and retiring a Canuck, right, which you know, should have happened the first time, frankly. Alex Edler's... You know, honestly, when I think about Edler, the thing I think the most about is the reinvention, right? The way that he was this like uber skilled, big, you know, could be physical, sometimes wasn't always. Sometimes the market criticized him for that. Like, was at the All-Star game, was sort of like this like offensive PP1
yep.
guy who had all this great chemistry with the Twins. And then you think about like warrior version of late career Alex Edler, like in the bubble, just playing the meanest cross-check you in the kidneys hockey. The way that he adapted over the course of his career, the way that he improved as like a defensive, high IQ defensive guy, even as, you know, some of his physical skills, like his speed, you know, began to show their age. I love watching players like that adapt and improve over the course of their career, and Edler did it just about better than any other Canuck in recent franchise history.
Yeah, so. And you know, he ended not 1,000 games with the Canucks because he went and goes plays 2 years with LA, but ends up in his career over 1,000 games, 1,030 games, and to do that, you have to have some ability to adapt, right, and to keep changing your game, keep working on your game, keep improving, and we certainly saw that from Alex Edler, certainly in Vancouver and towards the end with the LA Kings as well. I'm going to skip the broadsheet here. We have a clip from Rick Dhaliwal and Brock Besser. Maybe we'll play it a little bit later in the show, but just in the interest of getting through the whiteboard, wrapping up so we can chat with Alex Edler at 12:30. Lineup notes, we've mentioned them, but it was an optional morning skate today. Rick Tocchet confirming that Kevin Lankinen will get his first start as a Canuck. No surprise there, given how Shelos performed in game one and the changes from yesterday that we saw at the team's practice. Tocchet confirms them. So Pew Suter comes in. We saw him skate on the wing with Atu Ratu at center, Connor Garland on that line as well yesterday. Noah Juulsen comes in as well. And as mentioned, Vincent Desharnais is out, and Neil Zaman is out as well. So those are your lineup changes for the Canucks going into tonight's game against the Flyers. Do you have a gambling betting update for us, Trancer?
I do. The Canucks are favorites tonight, as you would expect, but not by the same margin that they were against the Calgary Flames. Canucks are minus 180. That's actually pretty similar. Minus 180 to beat the Flyers. Flyers are plus 150 on the money line. Canucks are plus 140 on a minus 1.5 puck line, and the total is set at 6. You know, with actually steam on the under, plus 105 on the under 6 goals. You know how I feel about overs. You know how I feel about overs early on in the year. Matvei Michkov, we don't know exactly what his shot rate is going to look like in the NHL, but you can get alternate shot rates. There's a chance. I'm watching this guy in preseason. There's a chance that this guy is a zero conscience shooter. You can get plus 800 on 5. plus 800 on 5 Matvei Michkov shots on goal. I would play that. That's going to be one of my three this week. I'm just going to go there. I'm just going to go there. All right. We need to get to Alex Edler. Plus 800, Matvei Michkov, like 5 shots
and
on goal.
You know, look, I think he's going to line up like first line, power play one, right?
That's
what
I'm saying.
It's not like they're competing for the cup this year. So it's like, hey, Michkov, go do your thing. Go be comfortable. Go take some shots.
And he's going to have some excitement. You know, like he's going to have the adrenaline pumping for his first NHL game. Has to also one up Macklin Celebrini with a 2-point first period in his debut. Keep up in the Calder race.
Got to keep pacing the Calder Trophy race. Lots going on at Rogers Arena, including, of course, Alex Edler being honored and retiring as a Vancouver Canuck. We will speak with Alex Edler about that. Look back at his career here in Vancouver as well. That's coming up next on Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650.